you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 201 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. And today my guest is Rebecca Geller. Rebecca is the principal and founder of the Geller Law Group, which is a sizable law firm here in the Washington, D.C. area, practicing largely out of Fairfax, Virginia. They do a number of different things, practice areas, trust and estates, family law, business law, and the others. And what's interesting about them, amongst other things, is that Rebecca has grown this firm in a little under 10 years from a solo practice working from her kitchen table to a group of 21 folks. And that includes attorneys and paralegals and staff members and the like. So it's a really interesting discussion of how she created the firm with the expressed intent of achieving a work-life balance for a working mother, frankly, and attorney, and how that has been the driving force behind the growth of her practice. And so there's a lot to unpack there and a lot to learn from the discussion. And I hope you enjoy hearing from Rebecca Geller. Rebecca Geller, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, it's a delight for me. Rebecca, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
So my background is that I used to practice law at a big firm in DC with 500 attorneys. I left there in 2011 to start my own firm. The firm is called the Geller Law Group. We are based in Fairfax, Virginia, but we also have an office in DC and also work with clients in Maryland and North Carolina. I started the firm in 2011. I had an 8-month-old and a 2.5-year-old.
And oh, wow.
Was working all the time and needed to find a better way to do things. And that's when I started my firm with the goal of providing high quality legal services while also emphasizing a healthy work-life balance for myself and what would then become our team, which is now a robust team of 21 people.
Wow. So in 2011, you were kind of on the cutting edge. Well, not cutting edge, but the leading edge, let's say, of attorneys who were looking to try and achieve that work-life balance and take advantage of kind of innovations in the technology space that allows that to happen in a large way. It's interesting that that was a focus of yours when you started the firm.
It was. I thought it was a pretty simple idea, but it turns out that it was quite revolutionary.
Yeah.
In practice, that to believe that it was time to stop making women fit into work environments that were traditionally defined by men. And instead, I created a business model that made sense to working parents and embrace the new roles that both women and men are taking in their homes and in their communities. And when I started it, people questioned me immediately. The idea of working from home and setting your own schedule and having true flexibility. They said, the institution of law firms has existed for hundreds of years. Who did I think I was to reinvent the wheel? But I saw strong, brilliant, talented women fleeing from the profession of law because senior lawyers showed such utter disrespect for their lives outside the law firm. And I knew there had to be a better way to do it. And I did not see an alternative model in existence. So I created it. And We've done things differently from the beginning. We encouraged our employees to work from home and to build their schedules around the lives of their families and around our clients. I believe in that. I've seen to come true that just as much business can be done at a playgroup or a child's music class as it can at the traditional golf course. And we've seen that a firm that really understands the way modern families work can provide truly personalized services. And that's what we've created.
You know, your insight is so crystal clear, and it's forged, I think, in your experience. I might be presumptuous in saying this, but to me, it seems like it was forged in your experience at the big law firms. You know, because big law today has the same view of the role of associate attorneys and the role of paralegals and the role of legal secretaries as they did literally 100 years ago. And that hasn't really changed a whole lot. You don't find a lot of big law firms today that tell their associates, you know, you can work wherever you want to work from. You know, you can be as flexible with your schedule as you need to be. It's just not a reality that they experience. And I can imagine that the people who were challenging you when you said you were going to start your own practice were still of that mentality.
100%. And that mentality still exists and is absolutely still a problem. And I'm blown away the number of resumes I get every single week from attorneys who are looking to join our firm because they call us a unicorn of law firms. And even when we're not hiring, we get resumes constantly because it is different. And that have a law firm that really cares about our employees being happy in their jobs and happy in their lives is very unusual. I believe it's an important thing for our team to have happiness in their lives and in their homes because that attitude gets passed on to the work that we do for our clients.
And let's not mistake or make a mistake in believing or ignoring really the point that you made that work can get done at a playgroup or at a school function or in the parking lot of a kid's sporting event, every bit as much as it can get done on the hallowed grounds of the golf course, you know, where senior partners in law firms have no problem saying, well, that's part of the role of being a senior attorney in big law. You play golf, you cut deals, you do business, and that just makes sense. But working from your car while you're watching your kids' soccer practice, now that's antithetical to the practice of law. There is a bias there. There's no way to look at it other than that.
Without a doubt. And I'll take that example of working from the car while the kids at soccer practice up one a notch. I can remember doing conference calls while using a breast pump, sitting in the car while watching my children at soccer practice.
Okay, you win.
I went on to have a third child. when that baby was born, it added a whole other level of craziness. But it's true. And when my kids were young, you know, now my kids are, all their birthdays are coming up. They're turning 11, 9, and 6. So younger than that. Before elementary school, I really only worked Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I was home with my kids. And every Tuesday morning, we went to a local music class. And I took the kids there because it was a really great activity to do with the kids. But I was shocked how much business I got from this Mommy and Me music class. I would keep business cards in my diaper bag, and we got a ton of clients from it. Now, that wasn't the reason that I went, but I was amazed how much business could be obtained from just being around that demographic, which are families, and that's one of our targeted clients. There's a new way of doing things. Now, what was interesting is that I did not tell my clients that I was not working on Tuesdays because right. I was going to a music class. Because at the beginning, I found that many clients did not respect that. If they said, could we have a meeting with you Tuesday morning? And I said, no, I'm taking my children to a music class, especially in the early days when we weren't really established, that's not really, it wasn't really respected. I would just simply say, you know, I have a commitment, but I can speak with you on Wednesday. And that was almost always fine. And I could set the schedule the way I wanted. As things have progressed, I became much more comfortable saying to our clients that, you know, I'm not available for a call at 5 o'clock because I am driving dance carpool at that point, at that time, but I could do a call Wednesday at 9 a.m. And our clients have since come to really respect our values. And we've been very public about our values being focusing on family balance.
You know, I think the whole industry is getting turned on its head a little bit in that respect. And firms like yours have shown the way, are leading the way. But I do, in talking with, you know, tons of attorneys on this podcast, I do see a generational component to this as well. Not just women, men as well, who are coming into the practice of law these days, want to practice it on their own terms and want to have that work-life balance that you've achieved in your practice. And so I think the pendulum is definitely shifting much more towards an environment or a structure such as the one of the Geller Law Firm or Law Group. So, you know, I think there's hope in that respect, but I don't suspect that you're ever going to have acceptance of that approach by those who cling to the old values and the old systems and ways of doing things.
I don't know. I think that there is a shift. It's certainly going to take time. The old school model is going to change as people who start to embrace technology and utilize the concept of teleworking that just didn't exist 30 years ago. 30 years ago, when we didn't have the internet and you couldn't work remotely, you had to be in an office. The usage of computers just didn't exist the way it does now. So technology really makes this possible that you can do conference calls from wherever you are. Now, there also has to be a trust level. You have to trust your team that they will not take advantage of it. In my opinion, I hire people who are terrific, who I trust implicitly with the work that we're doing. Why wouldn't I trust them with their schedule? Why wouldn't I trust them to manage it? Now, that's not to say that it has never happened. We have place safeguards to make sure that people are being responsible with their schedules. And we work with our employees really closely to make sure that's the right fit for them when we're interviewing people. Not everybody likes the idea of working from home. We do have an office where we have people who do go into the office, and some people really like that option and need that option. 20, 30 years from now, I think there's going to be a shift, particularly as women start to take on more leadership roles within law firms, there will be a shift.
Yeah, and I don't think you're going to wait 20, 30 years. I think it's right around the corner from my perspective. So let's talk a little bit about then, you know, how you went about building this environment for yourself and for your employees. So you started off working at home. Literally working off the kitchen table?
Dining room table, but yes.
And then did you have, you know, public space that you met clients in, or did you eventually come to a point where you did establish a physical location to use as needed?
At the beginning, I was meeting people at coffee shops. I was going to their homes. I was doing a lot over the phone. Very quickly, I realized I needed a space where we could come to, you know, we handle a lot of wills and trusts and estate plans. We needed a place where they could come to sign the documents.
Sure.
We started to do family law, and a lot of those are in person, and we needed meetings to be able to have a place to have meetings. So we started using shared office space in Fairfax, and it was still kind of as we needed it. It was available when we needed it. But unless there was a reason to be there, we didn't need to go in. And that was also around the same time I quickly realized I needed to start hiring and began bringing other people into the firm. And that was 2013.
So within a couple of years, you felt like you needed to add staff. What was that decision process like for you? Because we had this discussion a couple of weeks ago about how most attorneys feel that they have to build up a bank account or a backlog of work to justify hiring, whereas others look to hire sooner rather than later so that it offloads the workload of the principal so that they can do more things to build the practice. Were you in one or the other of those camps, or a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. And then I'd add in a third twist here as well, was that I mentioned to you I had a third child. In 2013 was when I made the decision that I wanted to have said child, and knew in order to make that happen, I needed to bring people in so that I could take care of my new baby when that baby came. And I had had complicated pregnancies with the last two, and there was a high likelihood of having to go on to bed rest. And so I began planning for that a year before that baby came along, knowing that in order for me to have the life that I wanted professionally and personally, I had to set up structures that would enable that. So one, the business was booming. The work was expanding very quickly. The clients were coming in left and right. And so that was really promising. And I also started working with some people who had been part-time. My law partner, Maria, who is now the managing partner of our firm, she had left a law firm as well when her son was born. And she was a stay-at-home mom for a little while because her law firm was so inflexible with her life. And she and I had gone to law school together. So in 2013, we met for coffee and just started talking about, is there a way for us to potentially work together? And she started working with the firm very part-time. And this was spring of 2013. Firm was exploding. And within 6 months, she came full-time. She is one of the most integral parts of the firm now. Those were the kinds of conversations we started to have. I had hired another associate at the time, shortly afterwards, and another paralegal because the firm was growing and I could see the writing on the wall. I was not willing to work 80-hour weeks again. I knew the lifestyle that I wanted. I wanted to be able to have time with my children and to be a lawyer. And I needed to create a structure that would enable me to have all of those and have another baby.
So I hear attorneys out in the ethos here, hearing the words, business was booming, clients were coming in left and right, you know, we were growing by leaps and bounds. And they're asking themselves the question, well, how did you make that happen? What did you do to get all those clients? So what was your marketing strategy at that time? If you had one, how did you go about building that client base?
We used social media a lot. I'm amazed how many times we get tagged on things in social media. I am very active on Facebook and I am strategic about it so that I can have an extensive reach. I was involved with a lot of different Facebook groups. I also sought out a number of public speaking opportunities. One of the mistakes I think lawyers make is that they look for public speaking opportunities that are for the big, big conferences. You know, they say, it's not worth my time unless I'm speaking to 200 people.
Yeah, what a big mistake.
I really disagree with that. I find that I am able to be the most successful when it's a smaller group. 15 to 20 is a great sized group because a lot of those people will feel a connection with me. I'll be able to talk with them. And I offer a consultation to people who come through a program that I speak at. And then I'm able to then convert that into clients. So I looked for a lot of those opportunities, as well as making sure that we simply did things like returning phone calls. Before this interview today, I got off the phone with a new client who said, this is such a relief because my last attorney never returned my calls and would never be available. So simple things like that. We have an internal rule where we return all client communications within one business day. Even if it's something saying, I'm in court, saw your email, I'll get back to you tomorrow. Yeah. That goes a long way. And I think the last part that we do that's really different is making sure our clients feel comfortable with us. And in a way that I think sometimes lawyers don't always appreciate, many times lawyers speak in such legal jargon that it's very intimidating and overwhelming for clients to feel comfortable asking questions. We believe strongly in using plain spoken English to make sure our clients are understanding something, that they feel comfortable talking to us. and that we establish a rapport with them. I'm a big Washington sports fan. I spend a lot of time talking with my clients about who's going to be the next third baseman for the Washington Nationals. And establishing a connection with them so they feel that they have a friend they're working with as well as their lawyer.
You started your law practice to ditch the firm life and be your own boss, but your practice is running you. The good news, being an attorney entrepreneur doesn't have to be this hard. Jesse and Megan, the lawpreneurs behind Jurisdiction, are working to build a new generation of solo practitioners who love being lawyers. This year, Jurisdiction is introducing a new program, Next Level Law Practice. Next Level Law Practice is a rigorous training program that provides the tools and business fundamentals for estate planning attorneys to start and grow a profitable and streamlined legal business. Next Level Law Practice gives you access to videos, worksheets, templates, one-on-one coaching, and live group sessions that allow you to ask questions and learn on your own schedule. To learn more about the program, visit thrivejd.com. That's thrivejd.com. They're even offering an exclusive coupon code for the Law Entrepreneur listeners. Just enter the code TLE150, that's like the Law Entrepreneur 150, for a $150 discount off your course registration. And welcome to the show, Jurisdiction. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur. You know, I can't agree with you more, particularly about the speaking engagement part. I mean, I've heard so many attorneys say just exactly what you said, that, you know, look, I can't be speaking, you know, every week. I want to try and do it once a month, and it's got to be to a group of 100 or more. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? I would be happy to speak to a group twice a week if, you know, there were 10 or 15 people there, a mom's group, a parent's group, a PTA group, a homeowners association group, a tenants group, because that's where you're going to make that personal connection that leads to business when they can see you in a familiar setting, as opposed to, I don't know too many people who get business, particularly in a practice area like trust in the States, they get business by speaking from a podium in front of 200 people in a hotel ballroom.
Absolutely. I mean, I probably do 50 to 75 presentations a year. And I'm out there a lot. And sometimes it is a really small group, and those are still really effective. You know, the one other part that I would say as far as getting business is, a lot of people talk about finding referral partners, whether it's a CPA or a financial advisor or, you know, other lawyers who do other kinds of practices, which is true. You do need that. But you also have to actively cultivate those relationships. And by that, I mean actually sending out referrals. I find a lot of times that a referral relationship goes nowhere quickly because I'm the only one sending out referrals. So I will take my referrals elsewhere to somebody who will actually send referrals back to me as well. People pay attention to that. So if somebody wants to get together for coffee and establish that relationship, it has to go both ways. So for example, if you get a call to your firm saying, I'm looking to hire an immigration attorney, and you do not practice immigration law, simply saying, I'm sorry, I can't help you, is not a great way of handling that. It's much better find an immigration attorney who you respect and would want to send business to and say, I would love to send these clients to you. I don't keep track of it like a tit for tat type of situation, but I want to make sure I can send them to someone who will take good care of them. And oftentimes that attorney is really grateful, or that financial advisor, whoever it is, And it becomes a really helpful, mutually beneficial relationship. But I look for opportunities to send out referrals to people to help the people who are also helping me.
Yeah, I keep an open note on my computer with the various practice areas and that I do not participate in and who I would recommend if somebody called. And I usually have like four or five in each practice area so that I can quickly refer them to somebody who I know, trust, and like myself. And, you know, that's a evolving list. You stay on that list, you know, like you said, it's not tit for tat. I'm not tracking it one for one, but you know, I get a general sense if a relationship is working in terms of me referring clients to you and you referring clients to me, stay on the list. If it's not, then we're wasting each other's time. And so it has to be reciprocal in that nature.
I also think, too, it's important to follow up with the clients that you send to them to make sure they're having a positive experience. Because I have had that happen. I have sent clients to someone and it's been awful and they are really frustrated. And so I will then learn from that mistake and not send them to that person again.
Yeah, that's easier to do, I think, when it's your client, your existing client that you, like, say, did a trust in the States matter for, and they came to you and said, hey, do you know somebody who does criminal defense?
Yeah.
And that way you can follow up because you already have a previous relationship with them. If it's called, you know, if it's somebody who just calls you out of the blue and says, hey, do you do criminal defense? You say, no, let me refer you to this person. It's a little harder to do that follow up, but I get your point.
Absolutely. If it's somebody you know, that's very different than who just calls randomly.
So let's get down into the weeds here a little bit. And by that, I always mean technology, because I'm a tech nerd. Tell me how this works in your firm. How is the overall techosphere for the Geller Law Group structured?
So we have three main practice areas. We do wills and trusts and probate, family law and litigation, and small business and trademarks. So we have different tools that we use for different practice areas. The main one, there's really two. We use Google G Suite. So that is Gmail, which is our email base that gives us the ability to G-chat with each other and IM each other, which is extraordinarily helpful since we are not in front of each other. Oftentimes it'll be a quick G-chat of like, hey, are you free to talk? And somebody will say, I'm on the phone, but we'll call you when I get off. And that part is extraordinarily helpful. We also use that sometimes if we're tag teaming on client calls. And then we use Google Drive, which is where we keep our documents there and other functions from Google. The other big one is Clio, C-L-I-O, which a lot of law firms use. They unrolled a program last year called Clio Grow. Yep. We use Clio Grow and Clio Manage, and those are integral to our firm to be able to send out intake forms and engagement letters, as well as bills and keeping track of time and expenses. And they have an app that you can do on your phone and can keep track of a timer so that you don't lose out on those point ones, which are always an issue when you're doing hourly kind of work.
All right. So basically you're a Google house, Google Suite, Google Drive, Google this and that, along with Clio, the, I would say the preeminent practice management software package for attorneys. For our listeners, Clio Grow is what Clio a few months ago bought a company called Lexicata, and they rolled that functionality into the Clio platform, and that's what's referred to as Clio Grow now. And that's mostly the intake function, correct?
Intake as well as keeping track of things for different client notes about who's doing what and, you know, details about those clients and communications.
Yeah, sort of like a CRM type function within your practice management suite. So that sounds great. And is it largely hardware agnostic? Do people have all the same hardware platforms, or do you have a mix of hardware that you incorporate into the structures?
We have a mix of hardware. It's something that we're looking to possibly overhaul. You know, our firm has grown very quickly, and so it's something we're always kind of taking a hard look at. What do we need to improve? Right now, sometimes we are a combination of Macs and PCs, and that is not always the best function. Yeah. So it's something we just had a meeting with a vendor a few weeks ago that we are looking to possibly overhaul our hard tech.
Yeah, we had a guest on a few weeks ago, Elise Bowie. She's a family law attorney out of Seattle, Washington, who has a firm, you know, similar in structure to yours, and that most people work remotely. What she did, and I thought this was really very innovative, is she mandated a uniform hardware and software suite for each employee. And so she buys it. She has an IT guy install all the software on it and then makes that available to the employees so that everybody has the exact same thing and it's, you know, controlled centrally from the law firm. And I thought that's kind of an innovative approach. And she credited that for solving a lot of problems on her end.
Yeah, that's what we're exactly in the process of looking at, figuring out exactly what the right approach is and the right programs and systems that we need.
So what's the biggest change that you've experienced as you've grown this practice from you working at the dining room table to, you know, to this powerful group of 21 women providing just outstanding service in this area?
Gosh, I think we have learned how to grow in an organic way without growing too fast sometimes. We've had some periods of time where all of a sudden we've had an explosion and we have to maintain the same level of that work-life balance that is so important to us, that we have to make sure if we have too much work for a short period of time, is that a small spike? Or is this is a long-term issue where we've had a big explosion and work is going to continue and we need to start hiring people? Identifying that has been a big change for us, because as we've grown, sometimes it's simply we just need to shift things around. Also creating an infrastructure of almost the leadership infrastructure. We now have four partners within the firm, and having practice groups and creating really a bureaucracy internally within the firm so that people have direct supervisors, that we are able to do performance reviews for our employees in a really thoughtful way, which we do twice a year. But creating ways that are going to be necessary, but having more of an infrastructure of a team of 21 versus a team of 3 is very different. And we've had some growing pains as we've tried to figure that out. We had a big overhaul last year of our employee manual to identify things that come up now that didn't come up before. How do we ensure that there's always coverage around the holidays? People are not all out on vacation. You know, we do a lot of small business work. And so the end of the year between Christmas and New Year's is hands down our busiest time of the year. How do we make sure people can have that time away? So coming up with some policies and infrastructure that make more sense for a team of 21 has been one of the biggest changes that we have grappled with. We've made a lot of progress. I think we've done much better now than maybe a year or two ago when we grew super fast. But that's something that we are constantly thinking about to make sure that everybody in our team has a true work-life balance.
You know, you can't always plan for this ahead of time as you grow. I mean, it'd be lovely if we could build our processes and procedures, you know, right from the very beginning and just tweak them as we go along. But the fact of the matter is life changes and is different for a firm of 3 people versus a firm of, you know, 13 versus, you know, 23 or more. So it's understandable that there's some growing that has to occur there. How do you document your procedures and policies?
So we've had us, we'll create everything in writing, but then we have staff meetings where we go over it with our team and have big discussions about, you know, what are some of the challenges that we are facing and why we've created certain policies to make sure that, you know, the first time we had one of our employees who was called for jury duty, we just simply had not encountered that before.
Sure.
So,
right.
How do we handle that? And especially with a lot of our people in DC, they get called for jury duty a lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
One of the factors of living and working in DC.
Absolutely. The first time we had somebody who had a baby and figuring out our maternity leave policy. I mean, this in 2019, our team had 4 babies in that year. We had back in 2016, we had a joke to call it the fall of babies. And there were three attorneys who had three babies within 3 weeks of each other. Those have been times where we have to kind of come together and figure out we are a team, but we still have clients. And how do we work together to make sure that everybody kind of gets what they need and our clients get what they need too?
So necessity truly is the mother of invention in some respects.
Yeah, sometimes we plan ahead as much as we can. And then there are things that come up that are unexpected. And figuring, there's a lot in a law firm life about, you know, people say the old adage of ready, aim, fire. Yeah. I find a lot of times business owners and law firm owners in particular sometimes are very cautious to make changes. And they get ready and then they aim and they aim and they aim and aim and aim and aim and aim and aim. And then they finally fire and they've really overthought it. And what I believe is that sometimes you get ready, you aim a little bit and then you just fire and you try it out and we see how it goes. And then we aim and then we aim and we tweak it and make it better. Because I've seen a lot of times that sometimes the best way to figure out the holes is simply by trying something out and seeing what works. And many times I am surprised by what works and what doesn't work. We just have to sometimes think on our feet and be able to work with what we have.
Well, then taking that same metaphor, what are you aiming at in the future? What's your biggest challenge that you see on the horizon?
Oh, that's a good question. Figuring out how we continue to grow in a thoughtful way. We are busy. We are a busy firm. And making sure that our values remain true to us. So I've talked a lot about the family life work balance, and that is absolutely one of our core values. Our other core value is service. We are very involved with the community, and that is something as we have grown, we have been able to do more of.
Interesting.
The community service is a really big push within our firm. And that means a couple of things. That means taking on pro bono cases, which we do constantly, whether that is representing a domestic violence survivor in a difficult family law situation, or it is closing the law firm down for a day to go volunteer at a food pantry. We do that several times a year. We just finished in December. We did an annual, I think it was our eighth annual food drive. And we match all donations that we receive from people who give us food donations. And it goes to a local food pantry. We brought in close to 3,500 pounds of food. And then we shut down the law firm for a day. And we go volunteer in the food pantry to organize food donations for people who need it. That's always been a big value for us. And so we have continued to increase that and expand the service work that we do. As we've grown, we have the ability to do that. So that's certainly something that I'd like for us to increase our impact on, as well as identifying ways that we can grow our firm to provide more opportunities for people looking for a flexible work-life balance. There's a lot of potential for growth within our firm. There's a lot of people who want to be in a firm like ours, working with people who would like to potentially, you know, hang their shingle within our firm to be able to have the life that they want, but be supported by a team that gives them that life with still being a lawyer and a parent. I think there's some really creative ways that we could look to expand that, that we are in the process of pursuing.
Well, it sounds fascinating. I wish you all the best as you go forward. Tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything you've had to offer today.
Sure. So our law firm's website is www.thegellergroup.com. So that's www.thegellerlawgroup.com. And my email is similar to that. It's rgeller@thegellerlawgroup.com. The one thing that I would just say is kind of my parting words here is, you know, our firm's been highlighted in a number of publications around
Absolutely. The country.
Yeah. We were invited to be on Shark Tank. we declined that because we thought that might open us up to too many lawyer jokes. We participated in press conferences with members of Congress. As much as I'm flattered by the attention that our law firm has received, I wish we did not live in a world where it was newsworthy that a law firm equally valued being a good lawyer and a good parent. because the two should not be mutually exclusive. And my final thought would just simply be, sometimes people are overwhelmed by the idea of making a change. But I believe that the key to changing the world is simply to ask, but why? When someone tells you this is the way things have always been done, simply say, but why? For me, that makes me incredibly proud of our firm's leadership to reinvent the law firm model for modern day families. And I encourage other people to consider a similar path. For me, it was hands down the best professional decision I've ever made in my life. And I hope other people feel encouraged to be able to do the same.
Well, your clarity and your enthusiasm shines through with every spoken word. Thank you more for being a guest today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that will do it, fellow law entrepreneurs, for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors this week. That would be Ruby Receptionists and Jurisdiction. Be sure to visit us on our website at www.thelawentrepreneur.com or check us out on our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. Just search for The Law Entrepreneur. You'll find us. Make sure you consider joining our private Facebook group where we'll be having some new offerings starting the first of the year. So I want you to have a great week, and we'll see you next time. And thank you for listening to The Law Entrepreneur.